Oh, hey, we didn't see you guys there. Welcome to
No, I hate that. Oh, I hate that so much.
Hey there, I'm Jordan.
And I'm Nick.
We're just two regular guys who love talking about film.
And now we'd like to talk to you.
We decided to break down our discussions into three parts.
Because everyone loves a gimmick.
We discuss our expectations for a film before we watch it.
That's take one.
We give our immediate thoughts following the film.
That's take two.
And finally, we research the film at length to prepare for an informed and in-depth discussion.
And that's take three. So if you love film even half as much as we do, join in on the conversation.
This is take three, a movie podcast.
Take one.
So I brought a snack with me, and I want you to guess what the snack is.
A banana.
No, is that a real guess? No.
Yes. What the hell? What? Why are you making me guess your snacks?
Give me. Try and guess one more.
Does it have something to do with the Matrix?
No, nothing to do with it. Well, not that I know. Maybe in a weird way, which you'll see. But let me see if this will jog your memory. Are you ready? You ready?
Okay, you're gonna do this by yourself.
No, I'm not.
I don't like that. Stop.
Did you get tingles?
Oh my god, y'all. I have to deal with this every freaking time we record.
It's Cheerios.
Goes up to the mic like this.
For those of you who don't get the reference, you should go listen to the very first episode. And then you'll learn.
That's not a good, like, people are going to stay away from the first episode now.
No.
It's good in spite of him. I have a lot of good things to say in our first episode.
It's therapeutic to me, and I can hear myself in my headphones, and it just works out. Okay? So let me be me. Everyone else knows what episode we're doing. And I think this is the probably first time and very likely only time that this will ever happen, but we are watching a movie this episode that I have seen and you have not.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
To lie to people and tell people that I had seen it so they wouldn't make me watch it. And I should have lied to you.
Tell them your history with this movie, because I'm not sure I even understand it. Why would you lie to people about this movie?
It just never interested me. I feel like a lot of people have told me that, you know, it's just not for them. And I was just like, okay, might not be for me either. And then certain people have come around me and been like, oh my gosh, have you seen The Matrix? And I'm like, oh yeah.
What a terrible reason for not wanting to watch a movie.
Yeah, I don't know. It just didn't ever seem like my cup of tea.
But like, how else are you going to know the references or anything? Like, we talked about this previously and you said that you have no reference for what The Matrix even is, which is great because I get to...
There's like Keanu Reeves like doing backflips in slow motion and shit, and there's a red pill and a blue pill,
and that's all you know.
I don't know, other than like I know what the green, I know that there's like green numbers and shit like floating down, you know what I mean?
Well, listen, everybody, I want you to listen right now. This is probably the greatest day of my life because I get to see him react in real time to this movie. I don't even care if it's a bad reaction. I just can't wait to see the reaction. I can't definitively say that it's a good movie. Like, clearly it's a classic. Clearly it's referenced everywhere. But I've seen it, and there are parts that make me uncomfortable. There are parts that have stuck with me to this day. Like, it's one of those movies, but I think it's something you should at least have seen and know the references for. And I get to see that. I get to watch that tonight. And you've given me the greatest gift, so thank you.
What a weirdo.
It's
okay, let's watch this.
I'm serious. I'm very excited about this.
Take two.
I really, really, really hated that.
You're an asshole.
No, I'm just kidding. That was so good. I enjoyed the hell out of that. And like, I just never thought it was going to be for me. I didn't think I was missing anything. I really enjoyed that a whole lot.
I legitimately did not know how you're going to react, and I am so glad that it went this way.
Yeah, for sure. Me too. So I was surprised how good the special effects were. I was surprised how good the stunt work was. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew that the Wachowskis had been pretty cutting edge through most of their career, special effects wise and things like that. They'd, you know, had been known for creating some crazy worlds. But this, like, for a lot of it, I was like, wow, this is really good for literally being made 20 years ago.
Oh my God, it's 20 already. Yeah. I'm like, no, this is like 10 years ago. It's fine. Oh my God, it's been 20 years. Oh, but yes, granted, there are some dated moments, but I think overall, it's a pretty great movie.
Yeah. And I will say that if you're excited about an action movie, then I know something's, you know, I have faith in it a little bit more than I would. And then I think probably some people probably found the end cheesy where she basically like brings him back to life with that kiss.
Yeah,
but I was like, oh, I was totally into it. I was like, oh, this is really sweet and cute. I didn't mind that shit at all.
It's like Snow White brings Prince Charming back to life, and the sparks in the background went off just at the right time. Like,
it's beautiful.
There were some cheesy moments, and like the very classic, typical, like 90s action sequence, and the music behind it. Like,
but see, that's the thing. I have reason to believe that this is
one of the first ones.
I'm trying to think because the action. Granted, I really don't know of too many 90s action movies that I was super into. I'm more into 80s action.
Well, what 80s action were you?
Well, like, I mean, it's more realistic type stuff. Well, I guess it's not realistic, but not like that sort of stylized music blaring, like Die Hard or something like that. You know what I mean?
Again, uncultured. I haven't seen Die Hard. I mean, I'm sure it's pulling from like Kung Fu, obviously.
They absolutely.
Clear reference to that, but
absolutely. I don't think I knew that it was pulling off of Kung Fu. Like, I was legitimately surprised when they were in the dojo or wherever they were sort of fighting in that program with him and Morpheus when they were first, like, fighting. And I was like, wow, okay, I guess I just sort of thought this was, like, dodging bullets and everything. I mean, again, I knew nothing about this movie. Yeah. The idea that, you know, this could all be a simulation, I definitely – we're going to have a more in-depth talk about it, but – I am, like, putting it out there. I would rather not know. Even having seen the entire movie, I'm still on Cypher's side. I mean, not, like, the killing of people and stuff like that, but, like, wanting to get the hell out of there and just go back to ignorance. I honestly think that I would be happier not knowing. Because, like, once you pull the veil off, then you're just like, oh, wow, I'm floating around in this ship. And everything that I've ever known was a lie. And it's just, it's crazy.
I mean, we can get into the movie references and everything, or the I guess, just specific references. Because, I mean, there's Wizard of Oz and Alice in Wonderland just, like, riddled throughout this whole movie. But I think it definitely would be interesting to talk about the different kinds of people that there are in this world. Like, do you have your stayers? Do you have the people who find out and then would rather be dead? And, or like, do you, like, how much of the population do you think would actually want to stay in the Matrix and just be like, no, this is fine. Like, I'm okay with being a battery so long as I can still eat at my favorite noodle place or something.
My thing is that I would rather not know. So if somebody could give me that blue pill, I would be like, hell yeah, I will take as many blue pills as you want.
Yeah.
Right, it's the red pill is the, like, the you
the
know,
get out of the Matrix.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the blue one is like, go home and go to sleep. I would rather take the blue. I mean, like, I maybe that makes me like unheroic. Maybe I'm never gonna be the one. But like, if there is like a secret to the universe that completely shatters everything we know, I don't know that I'm ready for that. You know, I don't know. I'm not ready for it.
No, I mean, I brought up the Truman Show earlier, and I told him that this was sort of one of those movies that makes you really like
question everything.
It sticks with you for quite a long time.
That's the type of thing where I've heard that idea before. Like, what if this is all a simulation? What if we're all just like in these pods somewhere and we're all sleeping and we're all dreaming this or something? But like, I didn't realize what it came from and what it stemmed from, the idea, you know, that the Matrix is like, you know, the thing that these people are referring to. This movie has like solidified itself in pop culture forever. I mean, it will forever be referenced and talked about and discussed and theorized about. So I'm super excited to just get into the multitudes of stuff that we're going to be able to talk about and study and learn more about it. Cause this is, again, legitimately the freshest I've ever been. I've seen every other one of these movies. And now I like this feeling, to be honest with you. I think I want to do it with you next, but before we both go in blind.
Well, now you know how I feel, because it has always been like, because if you don't know by now, which you should, like, I am one of the most uncultured people ever. Like, there are very few classics that I've seen, and I'm trying to get better, but like,
I'm trying to get him better. Please don't think that I'm just sitting here being like, oh, you are uncultured. No, I'm trying to show him movies. Like, I've tried to show him Die Hard before.
No, we have. No, we've not tried Die Hard.
Bullshit. Don't lie to these people.
We have not tried. Okay, trying to me is we've started it, but I have said, no, I don't want to watch this.
I'm not held a knife to your throat. Do you want to watch Die Hard? No. Okay, well then that's the end of the conversation.
There's a difference between not being in the mood for something and just flat out not watching. Like, we haven't started it and I've said, no, I don't want to watch this. But how? Besides the point, this is beside the point. I think it feels good to be on the other side, and I'm so glad that like it worked out, because you very well could have hated this movie, and I'm very glad that you did.
No,
so.
Yeah, like I was pretty much in from the get-go. I thought I was going to be really confused the entire time, and when you were like, oh no, they tell you in a minute, and I was like, wow, okay,
I mean,
it takes
45 minutes, but I mean, it is a 2.5 hour movie,
so. Yeah.
I don't, like, I feel like Take Three is going to be more philosophical than anything. I still would like to hear about more technical stuff, but I really, from what you've heard about the sequels to this, I don't think those are something that I'm going to explore.
So everyone I've ever talked to about the sequels, or heard speak about the sequels, again, I try to avoid talking about this movie up until now.
And I can.
Yeah. Has said that they just like to pretend that they weren't ever made. Like, they would just like to pretend that Matrix is a solo movie.
That almost makes me want to watch at least the second one, just so I can say that definitively. But
someday.
I don't know. We'll see.
But one cool thing I do know about the sequels is, okay, do you know what back end points are?
Back end points?
Yes. When an actor is in a movie, they negotiate for their pay, and you can get paid up front, and sometimes you can get paid back end points, which is basically a percentage of what the movie winds up making. Mm. And so if a movie's successful and you have some good back end points, if you have a bunch of them, you can wind up being extremely wealthy off of that, right? So Keanu Reeves reportedly made over $110 million off of these movies.
The first one?
All of them. The sequels. Just Matrix Reloaded and Matrix Revolutions.
Oh my God.
And from that, he handed over his back end points to the people that made up the special effects and costume departments of those movies.
Oh my God.
Which instantly made them all millionaires.
Oh my God. See, so I've heard stories about Keanu Reeves and his relationship with like charities and stuff, and how he's
apparently
like,
the nicest, most philanthropic, like humble, generous person.
Yeah, but that I did not know.
And he's so amazing. Like, we were talking in this movie, I was like, he can always make it like something that would seem so sort of bad acting. Like, I don't know if it's him or the way he delivers lines or something, but I feel like he's just in movies sometimes and he has to look a certain way and stuff. And it's just like, maybe he's not the greatest actor ever, but he's so charming and amazing. Yeah. And I just love him.
What he's referencing is in the movie when he first gets the call from Morpheus, and he's like debating whether or not he should jump out the window, and he's like, what is this? Why me? Like, that kind of thing. I know exactly what you're talking about, but
I remember thinking, like, in Speed, that too, like, he's not he's like, it's intense, and he's thinking, he's like trying to brood, but he's not, he's just such a he's phenomenal. I love Keanu Reeves. He's great.
That's really incredible. I did not know that.
Yeah, awesome. Huh. Well, good. Let's go study this movie.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm ready.
Take three.
So Morpheus is like, if you take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. And then Neo's like, no, I'll take the blue pill. And Morpheus says, then I'll need to see some ID, because a blue pill contains pseudoephedrine.
Oh, hey, we didn't see you guys there. Welcome to
No. No, I hate that. Oh. Oh, I hate that so much. That is the worst. Oh, I regret that 100%.
So we just did some research, and we're going to talk about some really life-changing, life-altering, mind-bending.
Spoon-bending.
Shit. Oh, yeah, spoon-bend. Oh, yeah.
Good job. We're going to take you to school. You thought you graduated, but you'd be wrong.
So really, my research just led to a lot more questions, things that I want to talk to you about. So this is not going to be us definitively telling you the correct answer to any of these things. We want to tell you what we found, and we definitely want to hear what you guys think and what you would do in this situation, for sure.
In the situation of, like, being in the Matrix?
Yeah. So I know that we both had some cool things we just wanted to bring up before we actually got into discussions.
Yeah, what do you have? I'm curious.
So
I only have one thing, but it's super cool if it's true.
It better be.
No. I hope it is.
So my first thought, you know that I love production design and the cinematography, and in this particular movie, I really liked the idea that they used them to discern between the worlds throughout the film. Because, like, okay, so the scenes in The Matrix are all reliant on green, and the real world scenes are all blue. Then the fight scene, which really doesn't take place in the real world or in The Matrix, is yellow.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I feel like it kind of just helps to have visual discerners for the audience to, like, subconsciously travel back and forth between realities with the movie. It's yeah. It's like when the same person voices two different characters in a cartoon, and it's obviously helps with any, you know, with the transition between them being able to keep the characters distinguished from one another, yeah. Even though you know in reality that they're the same, you know yeah. That this is all just takes place in the world, but I think it's pretty cool that, like, anytime they jump between them, they have, like, a very distinguished color palette for The Matrix, very distinguished color palette for the real world. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. I only have one, and I actually had to YouTube this clip very quickly to see if the screenshot that I found of it was even true or, like, if it was photoshopped. But the scene when Morpheus is trying to show Neo, like, not to be distracted or to kind of put behind your typical responses to things because he's no longer in the Matrix. If you look at the part where he pauses everything right before the program's about to shoot him,
yeah.
And it shows, like, the wide shot of everyone in that little park or town square or whatever you want to call it. Everyone's a twin. Like, it's all played by twins. There are, like, mm-hmm. two.
They put out a casting call for, like, a ton of identical twins.
Yeah.
So that it would seem like there was, like, you know how all the extras in sort of the old video games, like, if there were people, they kind of looked like the same. And
there's like a set. That,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like a video game repeating characters. I was like, that is so cool.
That was cool, I thought. Yeah. And I was like, this could very easily be photoshopped, and I wanted to make sure. And so I just, before I said that, I did a quick YouTube search.
Oh, well, that's
and
good.
It's true. It's real. Yeah. So
I was thinking about different ways that I could research this movie, and I actually went to my college's library database and tried to look up and see if anybody there had written anything about the movie, and I actually found a really, really good article. It's about 10 pages long. I'll include a link to it wherever we include links. But the article sort of asks you to consider it from the perspective of the machines, just to sort of, like, see it from their view. And, like, it really is sort of bleak. Like, okay, so the moment that they gain any sort of sentience, they realize that they are in a world where humans used and abused machines. Basically, all because we are heavily over-reliant on them. We don't really know anything about the war that occurred between them, at least having watched that first movie. Yeah. But we do know that humans wanted to remain superior, like we always do.
Like always.
And then action was taken to remove all viable energy from the machines. Regardless of this war that we know nothing about, we do know that the machines ended it.
yeah, yes. They won.
Essentially, they gave humans everything they could possibly want.
Yeah.
At least attempting to at first building a perfect utopian society. I mean, sure, it was a lie, but their intent was to create a world that was much better than any human at that point had ever known, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think in that respect, the filmmakers were making sort of a comment that if it came down to it and our humanities were to be compared, mankind's humanity would not hold up. That machines in this situation were behaving more humanely than we would. And there's a lot of evidence to sort of back that up because, like, I mean, look how we treat our resources now. Think about something as unnecessary to survival as meat and milk. I mean, look how terrible cows are treated. It's this, it's almost as if, like, if we were all in the Matrix, but we were in our little pods and we were fully aware that we were just in a Matrix in our little pods. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, just livestock in general. I mean, yeah.
It's sort of a bleak view of humanity that we probably deserve to be taken out by these freaking machines.
I mean, I stand by that. I really think that, like, we are very stubborn, very arrogant.
I think what it boils down to is that machines don't have pride.
Yeah.
Machines, it seems like, at least these machines, they just wanted to survive. And again, you really, really don't know necessarily a ton about these machines, but clearly they could have wiped us out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So in that sense, like, it really brings up the argument of what it means to be human, because if humans are, I mean, clearly we're natural animals and our instinct is to survive. Like, does that make us any different from the machines? And if the machines are giving us this quote unquote utopia, like, was this a win-win in the end? I guess that it all depends on, yeah, it all depends on how you see us being farmed.
A lot of people in my research have used recurring patterns like the Fibonacci sequence and other occurrences in nature to hint at the possibility of a simulation.
To prove that our reality is a simulation?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what I find so interesting about this is in the past, I've read articles where scholars use the same evidence to try and prove the existence of a creative force within the universe, like essentially God.
Yeah.
And that got me thinking about the fact that there is seemingly a lot of conflicting commentary on religious beliefs in this movie. Like, for example, so in 2012, adherence.com noted that nearly 85% of the world subscribes to some sort of religion. Only about 15 to 16% of them identify as, like, atheist or agnostic.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So the majority of the world believes that there is something more than what we are experiencing at face value, something greater than us. And I think this movie is asking the question that if someone from the other 15% found that fact to be real, somehow learned that there was more, and could essentially exist on both planes, not just believing like religious or spiritual people do, but actually knew for a fact. Would any of them actually be okay with essentially being rats in a maze?
No. Oh my God, no. I'm actually really glad you brought this up because I'm so excited. I have a direct response to that. If there was someone from that 15% who came out and said, I have found the proof, let me show it to you. Not only would a majority of them most likely say that that person is wrong, but they would be hostile towards that person and keep him as an outcast. And part of my research involved looking up a lot of philosophers. And one of those was Plato. And Plato has this, he calls it his allegory of the cave. And let me tell you what that is. Basically, if you imagine a dark cave, and there are a couple prisoners in the back of this cave that have been there since birth. Like, their only sense of reality is the back of this cave. They can see shadows. They're facing the back of the wall, and they can see shadows of the outside. They don't know what these things are, but all they see are shapes that are passing the walls. They can't look behind them. So they believe that these shadows are their reality. They believe that it's their world. And one day, one of the prisoners escapes somehow and is exposed. He leaves the cave and is exposed to actual reality. The idea that these shapes that he's been seeing on this wall have actual form and names and are tangible, and everything he's ever known is completely shattered. He kind of adjusts his eyes to this new light, to this sunlight that is giving these shapes form. And then he's sort of renewed. And so he goes back to the cave and he tries to convince the other prisoners. Not only do they disagree with him, they think he's crazy and want to kill him. They want to, like, completely
eradicate any idea that there is any sort of other reality outside of what they know. And it's sort of a comment on ignorance, and it's how
people don't like to have their reality shattered.
Exactly. I mean, it's a fear of knowledge. It's a fear of maybe something that you don't understand. It's a primal fear.
Yeah.
They're not only comfortable in their ignorance, but hostile to anyone who tries to convince them otherwise. And there was kind of proof of this. Like, we see it every day. We see it. There's ignorance everywhere in politics, especially. And I think in the video or the article that I read regarding this, Socrates was actually sentenced to death for, quote unquote, disrupting the social order, for trying to educate people on things that they may not know. And people weren't happy about it. They were like, this is something I don't understand. This is something I fear. Like, you are, get away from me. And it's,
yeah.
And I sincerely think that if someone were to uncover this big truth, humanity is so stubborn in their ways that it wouldn't even matter. I think we would be so stuck. I think we're so reliant on, quote unquote, the Matrix, like this, yeah, this comfortable happy, that no one wants to leave it. So I think you would not be alone in wanting to take the blue pill and wanting to stay in blissful ignorance.
This really has nothing to do with anyone's specific religious beliefs, but I will say that I am someone who believes in a higher power. Now, if someone came to earth and said, hey, I am Jesus, I am whatever, Allah, religious leader or whatever, regardless of what I believe, I would still be skeptical as hell. You know what I mean? Yeah. I wouldn't be like, oh, he's here. You know what I mean? And I really, God, I can't think of too many like educated adults that wouldn't feel the same way. You would have to really start doing some miraculous shit.
Yeah.
So it's like, I agree with you basically, like people, regardless of whether or not it is something that they have believed their whole lives or not, we're instinctually designed to be a little skeptical about things and to be afraid of change.
Yeah. And maybe that'll be our downfall. Like maybe that's our weakness. I think this kind of goes back to the religion discussion that we had. I think it was for Interstellar. About there being, you know, proof of a higher power, and how this movie brings up so many philosophical questions that it blows my mind, and I don't know, I can't stay grounded. It's
hard to have a grounded conversation about this. For sure.
What is life? What does it mean?
Going back to talking about religion and things, I mean, this movie is dripping in Christian symbolism and references, like Neo being the savior, the one. Mm-hmm. Carrie Ann Moss's name in the movie is Trinity.
Oh my God, how did I miss that?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Neo is born into the Matrix, like Jesus was born into the world, you know, both as saviors of their respective stories. There are obviously elements of sacrifice throughout the film. I mean, this is a cool one. Neo's death lasts for 72 seconds, and Jesus was dead for 3 days, which is 72 hours.
Do you think – oh, my God.
I cannot imagine that is
– accidental.
Yeah.
I would hope not.
Yeah. I mean, because, like, he's a very iconic figure, so if they're trying to make a statement
– yeah.
You know?
No, that makes sense.
And then, obviously, the last frame of the film, what does Neo do? He ascends into the sky.
He flies. Yeah.
That's
flies
the last away. Part that, you know, that's Jesus's piecing out in the Bible, too, when he goes up into the sky. And I feel like the idea of the simulation works its way into a bunch of different beliefs. Like, obviously, the idea that there is a supreme or intelligent creator, but what about the idea of, like, reincarnation? So, are we supposed to believe that if we get in this simulation and we live one life, do we just die, get tossed out, or do we just go right back in after the current one? Like, what, yeah. You know what I mean? People, there are a shit ton of people that believe in reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, the idea that this is all a simulation really does, I think, speak to the fact that, like, a lot of people are driven to religion by the thought that, oh, there's got to be something else out there. How can you look at the sunset? You know what I mean? And I think, well, okay, what if it is a higher power that we know to be God or whatever that's running the simulation? You know, I mean, there's no way to concretely say, you know, anything for sure is right or wrong. But like, it's really interesting to theorize about the fact that it really, that really could be where a lot of this, these ideas come from, you know, if that really was the case.
Yeah. It's really kind of scary, to be honest. Like, it's terrifying. It's terrifying. It's terrifying to think
again,
about.
Blue pillar right here.
I saw somewhere that the whole Matrix, or the idea of the Matrix, sort of resembles the Garden of Eden, and the red pill is eating the apple. And kind of the idea of like being thrust into this reality that is the opposite of everything you've ever known to be true and real, like since you were born. And it's this fight between like a convenience falsehood versus the inconvenient truth. Like, you're stuck in this beautiful garden without knowing, you know, the evils of what could be. And then you take the red pill and finally everything is clear again. And I thought that was interesting.
That really is interesting.
Yeah.
So I also read an article about tech entrepreneur and zillionaire Elon Musk. And basically he got asked about the simulation theory and whether or not he believed in it or thought much about it. And his answer really interested me. He said that he did believe it and he thought about it a lot. And probably the main reason why he believed it is because if you take like the 70s where we had Pong, which was like so simplistic, you know, he literally
the game.
Yeah, he said like the two rectangles in a ball.
Yeah, the two paddles, yeah, and you got to keep the ball in the court, yeah.
So, so simplistic. And now, just a few decades later, we have photorealism in our games and animation. He basically made the point that if we take that rate of improvement and growth in technology and apply it to a civilization living hundreds or thousands of years in the future, it makes sense that they could create a simulation that is indistinguishable from reality and that we could very well be a part of it. He went on to say, and I quote, "This is crazy. The odds that we are in base reality is one in billions."
Damn.
Meaning that, like, if the odds that there is not a future civilization that has locked us into some simulation, that we are not living in a simulation, that is one in billion.
See, that seems very small, but that is even, like, to me, that's still too big of a chance. Like, that's so scary. That's terrifying. The fact you said that the chance that we are living in a simulation right now, or
the chances that we are not living in it, that this is base reality.
Okay, well then you just completely flipped.
That this is that we are real is one in billions. That is crazy.
So speaking of the simulation idea, kind of wrapping up that point, the scene when Neo is confronted with, he's in his apartment and then someone knocks on his door, rings his doorbell or something, and he is paid for like a disc or something. I'm not entirely sure. He pulls out a book called Simulacra and Simulation. Mm-hmm. And when he opens it, it's hollowed out and it has all of the stuff. And that's where he keeps all of the stuff, I guess. It's a real book. And Jean Baudrillard wrote it. And basically the whole premise of it is that it claims that modern culture has evolved to allow simulations to become more real than reality itself. And I think in the book he uses examples like running or walking, and they're a bit outdated and hard to understand, but like it's very clear that we can see that this is absolutely happening. If you take the movie Ready Player One, for example, it kind of takes this theory and applies it in the form of like video games, that things are suddenly becoming carbon copies of themselves and reproducing themselves in an alternate reality. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing. And I mean, like, what a perfect, clearly that was planted. That was, you know, planted in the movie, but I thought that was an interesting point that relates to.
Yeah, absolutely. And did you know that all the principal cast was, among other books, they had to read that book.
Did they?
Before they were even allowed to open the script. Carrie Ann Moss, Keanu Reeves, Lawrence Fishburne, they had to read the simulation book.
Now it makes me want to read it.
Yeah.
Or maybe I don't. I'm like already scared.
I'm like, I'm cool with like peacing out on this type of stuff for a while. I am taking several blue pills.
Well, good, because you sound congested, so.
Thank you.
I'm just kidding.
I probably am.
I did a lot of philosopher research. One of the bigger ones that relates back to simulacra and simulation was Karl Marx. He wasn't explicitly referenced in this movie, but the philosophies of the Matrix, I think, match most closely to his. He claims that the exploitation of the working class is only possible and exists solely because it does not perceive itself as being exploited. And we see this in politics today, especially in the White House, and like putting things in the public eye to distract from something else that's happening. And I don't want to go into specifics. I don't want to like bring up any specific politics, but like it's very clearly like,
yeah, that seems really intentional to me. I never really thought of it like that, where if the rich are the robots and they are taking advantage of us
without us knowing,
and they don't even realize it.
And that, like, that's the key. That's the key to exploitation, is to make sure that the exploited do not know that they are being exploited, kind of thing.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. It's
this also, movie has a lot of levels.
Yeah. It's also terrifying. Like, yeah.
But it's also really great because Keanu Reeves is amazing.
He is amazing. So one of the other philosophers that I researched was Descartes. Descartes was someone who struggled with the idea that relying solely on our senses is a poor way to construct a reality, because our senses trick us like pretty much on a regular basis. Like normally we use all of our senses at once to sort of formulate whether or not something is real. Like I can see it, I can touch it, I can hear it, taste it, and feel it. But we're fooled pretty much constantly. Like if you take optical illusions, for example, or when you're walking down the steps and you think you're done and really there's one more step. I mean, it's
it happens to me a lot.
Or the biggest one, dreams, where our mind is really tricking us into realities in our sleep and convincing us that they're real all the time. This whole debate is what sparked the quote, "I think, therefore I am." He basically struggled with this idea so much that he thought that there was this like demon or evil scientist that was creating a world for us. Related to this, this all ties back, I promise. Just stay with me for a second.
No, you're good.
There's another philosopher. His name was Bertrand Russell. He came up with a similar theory that the universe was created just 5 minutes ago, that everything you're seeing, be it the dust on your shelves or gray hair, or even the idea that gray hair is typically a signal of older age, has all been manufactured, including your memories, like including the thoughts and your intelligence that tell you, oh, gray hair typically means that, you know, someone is older. He asserted the belief that there's no way that we can disprove this. So like, there's no way to prove that the universe didn't start 5 minutes ago and that these memories are all implanted. But he begs the question, does this actually matter? Like, is this something that we should worry about?
No.
Going back to Descartes, well, Descartes says, yes, it absolutely does. And it sent him, understandably so, into this huge mental downfall spiral. But he ultimately concluded that because of all of this doubt that he has in his head, like, oh, like, is this reality real, or is this just an evil demon or an evil scientist that is planting all of this in my head or warping my reality? I have the capacity for doubt. I have the ability to literally have the thought, is this real? So yes, his body may betray him, but he has thoughts and therefore a mind. So he can think, and therefore he is real. Like, yes, his body can betray him, but he has the capacity to think doubt. Therefore, cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. Like, that's how that whole thing started.
Oh. So, 'cause I was going to ask you, how else could we function without our senses?
Now, like, I would argue that, like, we could still maybe think that our minds are simulations, but in the case of this movie, Neo had the capacity for doubt, and that doubt is what made him pick the pill that he did, and it thrust him into the world of the truth. So I think that's how this kind of comes full circle. That's how Descartes kind of falls into all of this.
Oh my God, and talk about doubt. I mean, he doubted that he was the one. Like, the Oracle planted that doubt in her, mm-hmm. or in his head, and then at the end, you see Morpheus saying, like, she put you right where you needed to be. Like, yeah. She gave you all the information you needed.
Yep.
That's awesome.
I agree.
Oh my God. And I started like geeking because I realized that you say Descartes and I thought it was Dick Clark and then Dick Hart. It's great. Descartes.
Yeah, the great philosopher Dick Clark.
I was like, who the hell is that? That's funny.
So that was pretty much the extent of my research. I was kind of afraid to dig any deeper to avoid just falling down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, this is some heavy shit, for sure.
Definitely.
For sure. I was thinking maybe we could end this with some questions.
Hit me.
If we are, in fact, living in the Matrix, would you want to know? I know I've talked a lot about how I wouldn't, but would you want to know? You're all about seeking the truth and everything, and you want to know everything there is to know, and you want to learn, and he wants to read all the books and wants to know everything. But would you want to know if we were?
God, this really begs the question what it means to be human. Because, like, I want so badly to believe that a majority of people would want to face the truth and maybe... this is such a hard question.
No, okay, so the way I see it is that, like, put yourself in the situation of Neo and Morpheus and Trinity. Like, would you rather continue living your life here as you know it until the day you die? Or would you rather see that tear in the fabric of reality, jump through it, and live the rest of your life probably on a ship somewhere?
Yeah, like floating, this is sort of like, you know,
trying to find the truth.
It's almost like you're asking me, would you rather, like, it's like asking me to join the military. And, like, you'd like to think that everyone would be willing to fight for a great cause and maintain peace. But, like, that's not reality. And I just don't know. Like, I want to say yes, but I feel like I would be such a miserable person. If I were to say yes, it would sacrifice my happiness, but maybe that's mandatory. Maybe that needs to happen in order to be fulfilled as a human being. Maybe that's not, like, does that make sense?
Are you saying that you don't truly feel like you would be fulfilled if you took that blue pill and went back to, but would it matter because you would have no idea?
I would probably be like the guy that wanted to go back.
Yeah. Oh my God. I agree.
I'd be like, yes, I want to know. Yes, I want to know. But, like, I would still want the choice to be able to go back. Oh, this is such a hard question.
That's actually goes into my second question. If somehow you did find out, like the people in this movie,
yeah,
do you think you could ever go back to living inside the Matrix? It's like the only world you've ever known, but it's completely fake. If there were no Agent Smiths going around trying to kill you, if it was just like, oh, you know, this is all fake, but you can go live your life normally, knowing that everything that you are surrounded by is produced.
Now this is like in my head right now. The question that I have is, if you were given the choice to live forever, would you? And, like, you can't, like, choose to die. Like, anytime you try to die, it doesn't work. To me, that feels like an entire life of, like, pure sadness. Like, going into the Matrix and knowing it's fake, I feel like everything loses its meaning. Everything loses its purpose because you're like, why am I doing this if I know everything here is fake? Then maybe I would take the red pill.
Can I refute that?
Yeah.
I feel like reality is only as real as our perception of it. But I go back to reality, and sure, I know that this is all a simulation and that I am a simulation and that we're all, you know what I mean? It's all, everything around us is fake. But I can still feel, I can still eat, I can still do everything that I've ever done or wanted to do. It's just like going back to your normal life. Because, like, honestly, if you do even subscribe to the possibility that there is a supreme being that's created all of this, what's the difference?
The difference is knowing. The difference is knowing that at first this simulation was your reality, but now your reality is completely fake because your reality is I am in a vat somewhere living in this fake world. Like,
I feel like any food that I eat would lose its taste. Like anything that I would do would just kind of lose its substance.
I feel like no matter what someone said to me, no matter what someone said did to me, pizza's never gonna not taste like pizza. They'd have to cut my taste buds. Like, I don't understand what you could do to make pizza not taste like pizza, to make it worth completely surrendering every hope and dream I ever had in the reality that I grew up thinking I was living in.
Then let me offer this. If you were given a choice to be in the army that fights with Neo and Morpheus and Trinity and that whole team and could fight in order to get humanity out of those vats and back into a reality, like, isn't that better?
The way I see it is that mankind was in those vats and every single one of them was living a life that in my brain is normal, seems normal to me. You know what I mean? Like, that's what we were supposed to think at the beginning of the movie, that it was all normal, right? So basically taking everyone out of their normal lives, every human being on Earth, waking them all up and being like, actually, you live in this shitstorm. Like, there's no sun. We're being chased around by machines that don't like us, and we live in this ship. And there's now like three of us. So no, I would want them to stay. I would want everything to stay as it is. They have not, I don't know about how this franchise ends. They have not provided a suitable alternative for my normal life, honestly.
I get that. I guess, like, here's the thing. I would hope that enough people would take the red pill to make the Matrix obsolete and make that reality an actual reality. But I don't have enough trust in the human race. Like, I feel like that would never happen.
You know who I feel like would take the red pill? I would think that, like, this would probably be your highest percentage of red pill takers are astronauts.
Yeah.
They've devoted their lives to exploration and pioneering and things like that. And it seems like it would be just the natural progression of that, you know, going to a different reality. But, like, I want to make entertainment content for the rest of my life. You know what I mean? I'm not going to go to Mars in a few years when they do that. Like, I am cool, like, living my best life here on Earth until someone says that I got to go to space with Jessica Chastain. I will go then. But, like, jumping through the fabric of reality right now to a scorched, dark Earth, I just does not seem worth it to upset the natural balance of, like, everyone on Earth.
can you call it natural?
What is natural? What do you think that, natural is?
That's what this whole movie brings about. Like, what is natural? What does it mean to be human? What is it?
Everything is only what we can perceive it to be. So it just feels like it's natural because that's all, like, the greatest minds in the world are still in a simulation. So, like, if the answer is with them, like, I guess you could only really answer that question if you're one of those people that can sort of see things in both worlds, somebody who knows the truth about both worlds. I guess the only way you can really answer that question.
I think I would still take the red pill.
No, you wouldn't.
I feel like that's the moral choice.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like that's the ethical choice.
If you're to take the red pill.
Yeah.
It's understandable. I'm really curious to know, how many people of you are going to lie and say you take the red pill? No, I, like, by all means, if you took the red pill, I would salute you.
It's making my mind do somersaults. This was one of the more difficult ones to research because a lot of the theories that are out there involve all three movies, and it made me really want to watch the other two, even if they're terrible. Like, I still would like to watch the other two. And
you know what I was looking up? Actually, number two is fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, and it made more money than the first one, but it's still, for some reason, very, like, I know a lot of people that are like, oh, we don't like that one.
These sequels are, like, avoided like the plague. Okay, so it's confirmed. Like, I'm going to go watch these and see what other philosophical discussions I can come up with.
Can I watch them with you? Because I know, like, at the end of the day, Keanu Reeves is in them.
Yes.
While I definitely regret waiting so long to watch this amazing film, I'm also kind of regretting overthinking the reality of our existence. Nonetheless, I still can't wait to hear all of your thoughts on The Matrix. I'm looking forward to our best discussion yet. This episode was produced and edited by only Nick Crawford. Jordan Sato took the red pill and I haven't seen him since. So remember to follow me at take3amp.com and take3amp on all social media. Also, share this podcast with everyone you meet, like even in the grocery store or in the bathroom at the club. I do not care. Seriously, someone cuts you off in traffic, pull over, get out of your car, and go tell them about Take 3, a movie podcast. You're in confession at church? Ask the priest for forgiveness for not sharing it with them sooner. Your baby's crying in the park? You know what babies like? Movie podcasts.